Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. I hope everybody had a very, very nice, restful, and fun, family-filled, and friend-filled weekend. I have done some more researching today, and the topic that I have chosen tonight, because of some things that I witnessed this weekend, is homelessness. And very sadly, in my research today, I found out that a good percentage of our homeless are, of course, children. And the biggest reason I can find that all of this is occurring, of course, is the job market is a big reason. The fact that several years ago, new families, were offered money by many of our banks to fulfill the lifelong dream of owning a home. And many of them walked into home loans that were, to say the least, way over their heads. But because they could show a decent living and they had worked hard to maintain some good credit, they were given that good credit. And then when the job market and the housing kind of started crumbling around our feet, a lot of these people lost their jobs. And if they didn't lose their jobs, they quit making as much money as they'd been making. Maybe they were in the arena of a realtor. Maybe they were in the banking business. Maybe they were working at a well-established resort and as a manager or a department head, they were making a good paycheck. And then as things dwindled and settled, what happened to a lot of these folks is they lost their homes. So what I'm reading now is that a good majority of our homeless either live in the vehicle, if they were lucky enough to be able to hang on to a vehicle, or a van, even better, a little bit more room, or they're living in some of these extended stay hotels and motels. I know this has been going on for some time because way back in 1999, 2000, I was the general manager at an extended stay. And the hardest part of my job was on Friday nights making sure all the people could pay their rent. You pay for it weekly. There's no amount of money that you have to cough up to be able to get in, just the 1 week's rent. But you're never given any extended credit. So if they were lucky enough to have a job, even one parent, they were able to stay in one of these accommodations that had a kitchenette, a bathroom, a living area, and a bedroom. And I had a lot of people. This extended stay was full most of the time. And a lot of times they were visitors that would come, say, for 3 months out of every year and have a job to do in this area. Or businessmen that didn't care, that didn't want the overhead of a home or an apartment or a condominium and were perfectly happy to live from week to week in one of these little apartments. So I was aware of all, when I first started working there, of all the families that lived there. I was kind of surprised, but as I got to know everybody, I realized that in most cases it was not by choice. It was by life's bumps. So I'm aware of that. I did not have any idea, some of the statistics that I looked at today that actually talked about the highways that lead to Disney World, because Disney World is supposed to be the magical kingdom. And they actually did some statistics, sorry, all of the all of the hotels and motels on those roads are filled with families. Not sure what's going on with me. I'm going to open the lines for Shelley so she can help me talk tonight, because as you can tell, this cough that never really left me is back with a bit of a vengeance. Hi, Shel.
Hey, Ray. Well, I don't know. It's like the blind leading the blind with you and me, because the cough's back with me too. You know, they've been spraying a lot out in the acreage. I don't know if you had heard that they had a couple reports on it. And the last two times that I got really, really sick was right after they were spraying. I don't know what they're spraying for. But the last two times that I got really bad was within 24 hours of them spraying in the area. And a couple other people I spoke to out there that are near us have similar mm-hmm. symptoms. So I don't know what they're, like I said, I don't know what they're trying to spray for, if it's insects or what, but it's not good for people. They should be doing it later in the night or whatever, so that it doesn't really affect human beings. But man, it's gotten me twice now, and this cough mm-hmm. came back both times. Yeah. So I'm feeling a little wheezy, and I was coughing so hard earlier today, I started gagging at my desk.
I
work in an mm-hmm. office all by myself, so thank God I didn't offend anybody. But it was like, damn, my eyes were tearing and everything. So,
I'm afraid that there might be, you know, it's also pollen time, and all you got to do is be. I was outside a lot today, and the wind's mm-hmm. really blowing, so I kind of was blaming it on some of that. But
yeah, but I've been in an office all day, and I have the same thing. There's no trees in my office.
Yeah. Well, that's too bad. We'll have to do something about that, Shel.
We'll have to do something about that. I agree.
Yeah. So what I'm talking about tonight is homelessness. Mm-hmm. And I have I did some research today. And, you know, I was kind of upset about one little thing that I didn't share with the rest of the audience. But when I first started pulling up information, many of the largest articles, many of the things that came up first, which popped up first, were from 2011 and 2012, and some even before that. So it made me feel like, you know, I wasn't really getting pertinent information. So I went back and I went into homelessness statistics in 2013. And, of course, what I have found out and what I've been sharing with everyone is the fact that a good majority of the homelessness out there is with families, with children.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's also the children that are on their own as well, which I haven't gotten to yet. But I shared with everybody that in 1999 to 2001, I was the general manager at an extended stay. And when I first went to work there, I figured it was just, you know, people that wanted to spend a week in Florida, and instead of paying every night, you know, they'd go to an extended stay and pay a weekly rate. Smart, right?
Yeah.
But what I found out was probably out of 150 rooms, 100 of them were families, husbands and wives, sometimes one child, sometimes two children. And they just couldn't afford to move into any place else, because with first, last and security, even then, in 2000 or in 1999, even then you were looking at $500 times three, and now it's $1,500 times three.
Right,
so
exactly.
The statistics show that a lot of kids today are picked up at local motels and hotels to go to school.
Wow.
And one of the interesting facts was that all of the major highways that drive into Disney World, which is supposed to be the Magic Kingdom, has the most registered children in their hotels and motels that live there.
Oh, I wonder why that would be, because you would think those hotels would be more expensive than hotels off the main drive like that. Anytime I try to go up to Disney or Universal, if I try to stay at a hotel that's like really close to them on the main drag, it's always more expensive than ones that are on the outskirts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually kind of surprising.
Well, you're probably talking about like name hotels. I'm talking about extended stays. Now, most of these are not Marriott's, but even still.
Oh, I got you. So you're talking about Motel 6's or along those lines.
Right. There's the Villager. Marriott has extended stays, but they're relatively expensive. But some of the, the lower classed ones, the one that I managed wasn't bad. They were clean, and you had a kitchenette, a bedroom, and a living room.
Mm-hmm.
And a swimming pool and all of the kind of stuff that goes with a regular hotel. So there were quite a few kids living there then, and that was that was like 12 years ago, 13 years
right.
ago. But some of the families that I listened to interviews for, a good percentage of them who have just kind of bottomed out this past year, 2012, beginning of 2012 into 2013, are living in their van.
Oh,
and
boy.
Mom and dad park in the parking lot of an all-night Walmart, and the kids go in the bathrooms to wash and get ready to go to school.
Wow.
And one little girl said, I'm so embarrassed that some morning I'm going to be in there and I'm going to run into somebody that I know from school while I'm in the bathroom brushing my teeth and brushing my hair, And you could hear her voice kind of quivering, and I thought to myself, my family did that a long time ago. And Shelley knows a good part of this story, but one of the reasons
right.
I decided to do this story is because it actually happened to us, all
right.
six of us. Our house burnt to the ground in upstate New York. And the insurance paid off the mortgage and didn't give us anything left over. All we had were the clothes we were wearing when we left for work and school that day. And very luckily, everybody was out of the house and my furnace exploded. And I farmed all my kids out with different friends. And Spike and I stayed in a motel. And people were wonderful. Don't get me wrong, I have never been through a tragedy ever, ever, ever in my life where people didn't rally and do things for us. People were wonderful. And I remember chastising myself because after having 4 kids in 5 years and working 2 jobs, I used to think, oh, I'd give anything for a hotel room and nobody else there but me and Spike. And then when it happened, I hated it.
Aww.
And
yeah.
Then I couldn't find anybody who wanted to rent to a family with 4 kids. And we finally found a place to live, but it was such an awful house that friends of mine who worked for social service, when they found out where we were living, came to me and told me that that house had been condemned. So, make a long story short, it was getting to be summertime, and we thought we were probably going to leave New York. So we moved into cabins at a state park. And there were no facilities in the cabins, but there was a big shower house. So every morning we'd all get up. It was March, so it was still cold. And we'd get all dressed and go to the shower house, take our showers, get ready to go to work and school. And I'd take all the kids to school, and I'd go to work. And I was pretty sure that I was probably scarring my children for life, going through something as demeaning as this. But years later, when we talk about it, kids, of course, are incredibly resilient, and I'm sure in the moment it bothered them, especially my daughter. But years later, when we talked about it in retrospect, it was like an adventure.
Right.
We learned how to cook everything on a grill. We learned how to take showers and sit by the fire and get warm before we went to bed because there was no heat or anything in these cabins. And we actually did have some fun. And we'd lay in the cots in the cottage and we'd all do the Walton goodnight thing, goodnight Jim Bob, goodnight Billy mm-hmm. Joe, goodnight, and laugh about doing things like that. So you make it through anything you have to make it through. However, we both still had jobs. That's how we were able to pay for the cabin. That's how we were able to eat. These people that I'm reading about have nothing. And there are, like, when I looked on Google today, there must have been at least 8 different organizations that are trying to remedy or stop, if you will, homelessness. And from what I can see, way back in 2005 and 2004, when they realized it was at epidemic proportions, nothing has made not one damn bit of difference. Nothing.
Yeah, there's still, there was a time when homelessness was like the guy on the street who couldn't hold a job and got laid off, and a lot of times they were military veterans, which made it even more offensive that somebody wasn't doing something to help them. But for a long time, people would see homeless people, and it was usually older men, and that's what they thought of them. And now, like you said, the statistics are that the majority of homeless people are families. It is astonishing to me that something hasn't been done on a grander scale. I mean, there's so many abandoned buildings. You know, why not take these buildings and create some sort of a safe house for families until these people can get on their feet?
I can't for the life of me understand that either. I am sure if we addressed the right people, they have lots of answers for all these things. But I would certainly, for one, be interested in hearing how. I drove around today with some people from out of state who are thinking about buying a house here. So I drove them through the acreage. We wrote down lots of phone numbers, lots of realtors, and I showed them lots of abandoned houses. Houses that have just been, you know, there's no numbers out front. In some cases, windows are broken. They're really, you know, a mess. And, of course, kids and other homeless people are vandalizing them and using them. So I don't know for the life of me why, when we know that's going on, why something like that can't be done. And as you know, about a year ago, I tried really hard to start an organization called Grandma's House, and it would be kind of a safe haven for kids when they were in trouble. I did not want to have a home for them to live in and stay with me. I wanted them to be able to, though, have a safe house when there were betwixt and between, maybe fighting with mom and dad, maybe who knows what happens to a teenager. But having been that safe place in the past for other teenagers, I knew there was a need for it. With laundry and hot bath and some food, make sure that they were okay and help them get organized. And if they couldn't go back home, then help them. We would be the stepping stone to help them find a permanent place for them to live. So, but what I found out again today, one of the biggest things, of course, is food. Now, for those of you that are listening out there, there are amazing organizations. I know because some of them called me when I started organizing Grandma's House, that pick up extra food, surplus food from Publix in particular. Publix is a big donator of giving food to the needy or to a church organization or anybody like that. There's a lot of places out there where you should be able to get something to eat, and I understand that the big thing has to do with embarrassment and has to do with not having the resources to even research where those places are. So today I copied everything off my computer that I could find, and I have them all here on my desk. So if somebody in this area needs some kind of an outreach, I found Laurels of Windsor. It's right close to the city center. I got one in Green Acres. I got one in Riviera Beach. I got one in Lake Worth. I got some in West Palm Beach, lot in West Palm Beach, as a matter of fact. Family Promise of South Palm Beach in Del Rey. Faith Farm, the Lord's Place. There's all kinds of places that can help you. But I also understand that you're not sitting in a nice air-conditioned house with a computer to look at. I get that. So, and chances are you're not hearing me now. But one of you that are listening may know somebody who needs this. They are welcome to Facebook me, or they are welcome to call the talk show and tell me that they need to talk with me privately, and we will make arrangements. And I will give them any of these numbers that they need to know and help in any way that I can to find them a place to stay and to find any kind of food that's available. Now, in schools, most schools now, if you fill out paperwork and you're going through a tough time, there's free lunches and free breakfast, which is wonderful. So you can be pretty sure that kids are at least getting that. But most of the efforts that I saw, because some of them were very grandiose, you know, what was going to happen and what we were going to do and everything, but they've fallen by the wayside. And I'm ashamed to say that I think the reason they fall by the wayside is because nobody makes any money from them. And that's a sad part of the way things are working for us. So anyway, let me finish. We ended up, as I said, my husband and I were both working. We made it through all that time, and we left upstate New York and moved to Florida, stayed with my parents for like 10 months and found a house to live in. So it isn't easy, but if you all stick together and look out for each other and pay attention and don't become real self-centered and only think you're the only one that's, you know, going through some discomfort, you'll be able to survive anything like that. But it's still a shame, and I do believe that as people that are educated and are supposed to be warm-blooded, there should be something more that we're doing. So I do have these names. These are wonderful organizations. Most of them I had already heard of, but now I have phone numbers and everything. If somebody needs my help for that, all you have to do is call me. Now, the other thing that I think is awful, and I don't know what can be done about it, but maybe there's somebody out there that's really, really smart, and that is utilities. Utilities attack us. They're relentless. I mean, everybody has to have electricity, and electricity is one of the most expensive bills in a home. It's very hard to live without electricity in this day and age. And electricity, the down payment, the deposit, whatever you want to call it, is very large for most people. So after they pay first, last, and security, they get to pay a huge deposit on electricity too. Very hard for some of these people. Very, very hard. Now, the other thing that all this brought to my mind was the fact that in school, all the things that they're teaching the kids in school that are important. And I know they have classes called economics because one of my grandchildren is doing an economics class right now, and he handed me this sheet of paper, and I said, "Do you know what any of this means?" And he goes, "Well, I'm learning, Graham." And I thought to myself, what is all this? I mean, great big words that I've never heard anybody use, and I'm thinking to myself, why aren't they just teaching them the simplistics of having a checking account, of balancing your checking account, of paying your monthly bills, of setting up a budget for yourself, of learning how to use a debit card, of learning how to use a credit card, the importance of having good credit today. Where's that class?
That's right.
Because that class may stop some of the homelessness, Shell.
Yep. Well, a lot of people get them in trouble with credit card debt because teenagers aren't taught that when you buy something for $10 and you finance it on a credit card and you're paying the minimum payment, you're going to end up paying probably $80 for that thing. It's like they don't understand. If you look at your bill and you've got a bill that's a couple $100 or a couple $1,000, and you look at the amount you're paying each month, and then you look at the next month and you see how much of your payment got applied to the principal, you're paying mostly interest. You're not even paying against what you actually owe the credit card company. That's one of the ways they make so much money. But what it does is it puts you in a position where you're just never going to pay your bill down if all you ever pay is the minimum. But nobody's ever taught that. The credit card company doesn't tell you that. But everybody knows it. Once you're an adult and you've been slammed and you've had credit card debt, you know, most people know that after they've gone through all that. So why isn't this being taught in school? Why aren't we preventing people from getting themselves in trouble to begin with?
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm asking. And that's
exactly.
That's one
yep.
of the things that I would like to be able to talk to somebody about. And I do, you know, one of my kids in, matter of fact, it was David, the youngest one. He had a teacher who taught them all about checking account, insurance for your vehicle, the importance of having good insurance on your vehicle. I don't know, maybe he'd sold insurance before he became a teacher. I don't know. But he talked to him about all that stuff. My David didn't drive until he was almost 30 because of that teacher.
Oh, wow.
Because that teacher really instilled on him the responsibilities of owning a vehicle.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't know
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. David didn't even try to get his driver's license. All the other kids had their driver's licenses by the time they were 15 and 16, and not David. So I do think that that's something that maybe we could work on, and maybe even when we have we'll have a couple other guests that call on a regular basis, Joel and perhaps Linda could address that because they both have
mm-hmm.
ins with some of the schools. And Daniel called me tonight. He had something very exciting to share with me that I will share with everybody as soon as I know it's locked in. But he also is affiliated with a lot of the schools and would possibly be in a position to bring this up and at least, you know, discuss it, because I do think it would help a lot. I think nobody ever showed me either, and it shows in the way I manage money. I am a terrible money manager. So, and if you don't learn it when you're real young and make sure that it becomes habit, you'll have a problem all your life. There's a way to live on what you make, you know, there
mm-hmm.
really is.
Yep, yep, and it does come with budgeting. I had gotten into debt when I was younger, and a friend of mine was a financial advisor, and he actually showed me how to take what I was earning without getting a raise and get myself out of debt, and it took me about 2 years, and it was incredible. But it's like, you know, and it's like I was fairly responsible with my money. But it's a lot of times, if you're not setting a budget and you're not looking at, you know, the buck here, the buck there, people don't realize how it adds up, because they're only spending $2 on a, you know, they're out, so they get an order of fries or something like that, or they get a cup of coffee
mm-hmm.
or whatever, and they don't realize because they're only spending a buck or two at each time. But when you add it up with all the little stops you make during the week, and it's $30, $40, you do that times four, you know, you're talking $160 or $200 or something. You know,
mm-hmm.
but people don't realize, because they're spending it in little dribs and drabs. So when you have to write, he made me write everything down. Every time I spent a buck on a cup of coffee, I had to write it down. And once I really saw how much I was spending, I was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, that's a good lesson. You know, keeping an accounting of what you spend and saving mm-hmm. your receipts and always knowing what you've spent on what and but again, you know, it is like everything that we talk about on this show. It's about choice, and it's about making the right decisions. But
mm-hmm.
in an arena like money, you really need to have somebody teach you a little bit. It's not something that can just be, you know, learned on your own without making a whole bunch of mistakes.
That's right.
You know? So I thought when I started analyzing all the things that I read today, I thought to myself, so what would you do long term? And that was the first thing I came up with, is teaching people about money management and teaching people how to understand what a policy pays for. A lot of people get cheated on term life insurance. A lot of people get cheated on, you know, I mean, right now I am approaching the ever wonderful number 65. So I'm being bombarded with these beautiful Christmas cards. Yeah, Renee, birthday cards that say, "Oh, you're turning the wonderful 65. You can do this and you can do that. Let us help you with your insurance." I mean, I am being bombarded, and most everybody wants money from me. And yet, I know that there are organizations out there with little or no money. I can get coverage for anything I need over and above Medicare. But everybody that's knocked on my door, you know, wanted $110, $140 a month to cover me. And I know that that's really not necessary. But again, you know, I took a four-week course, about four weekends, on insurance and mutual funds years ago just because I felt incredibly stupid about it. And I was a manager then, and I had all kinds of companies that I was interviewing, and I needed to know more about it, so I did that. And I still didn't learn enough, but I was at least a little bit more capable of carrying on a conversation about it than I was in the beginning. Yeah. But even that, some of that, there should be a class on that in school so that kids understand, so that young people understand. Now, I'm sure if you get a real good education and you get into college and you get this and you get that, that eventually there's professors that teach you some of the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. Maybe not. Depends maybe on what you're taking in college. But I'm talking about simple grade school. By the time you are 16 and taking a job at McDonald's, you should know how to manage the money you're getting.
And how to invest
it. Exactly.
I mean, you could invest literally $5 a week in anything, all right? And the way it compounds and builds interest, you know, 20 years later, you could have tens of thousands of dollars in the bank from that $5 a week. So you don't even feel it, you know. I wish that I had understood that concept when I was younger. I've had a couple of 401ks and things like that that actually got me out of trouble a couple of times. But by the time I established them and used them, and I saw how the money built, you know, in a matter of a couple of years, even as an adult, you know, that was already in my 40s, and it still built up a lot. And I was thinking, oh, my God, if I had started this 20 years earlier, I would have had a boatload of money. And nobody ever told me to do that when I was younger. I didn't even understand the way that it was behind it, you know. So if kids could be taught that, you know, oh, forgot, so big deal to you. You're working at McDonald's, you know, you got $5 a week you can do something with. Invest it, you know, don't stick it in a stupid savings account. Invest it. Put it in a mutual account. It doesn't matter. You don't have to invest thousands of dollars, but that lousy $5 a week is going to be worth tens of thousands years later.
That's right.
that's the way it builds up.
So in order to know that instead of everything continuing this downhill slide, when we're talking about the kids of our future, the adults of tomorrow, obviously some of them are already set. Don't get me wrong. Somebody said to me the other day, Izzy said to me, you know, he says, you're very sweet. You believe in everything working out. And I said, I'm not. I am sweet because it suits me better. I have I don't have ulcers because I like to be like this and kind. I said, but I'm also a realist. I see things for what they are, and I deal with them the way they are. But I do believe that in order to really ever get us to a better place with things like homelessness or things like kids not being able to get treatment because they don't have insurance or a kid going without having a bone set in their arm because mom and dad can't pay the doctor. That's still happening today. That still happens every day. And there's something wrong with that, Shelley.
There is something wrong with that. I don't get that. I don't understand why, you know, if somebody doesn't have insurance, you know, because they're homeless or something like that, there should be some part of a hospital's budget to take care of indigent people. You just can't have people, especially children. All right. Okay,
well, there are departments like that, and yes, you can go to a hospital, and yes, a county hospital must take care of you. They must save your life, is the way it's written. But if it's not a county hospital and they save your life, then they can also just turn you back out into the street if you don't have money to pay to stay there. They don't have to give you an ambulance ride to another hospital that's a county hospital that has to take care of you.
Right,
you see,
right.
So that's where the line gets drawn like that. But if you are in a position to get into a hospital, there are, you know, there's always a social service worker. There's always somebody there who comes in and tries to do something to help. But what about the people that are afraid to do that?
Right.
What about the people that aren't ballsy enough to walk in someplace and say, no, I don't have any money, but you better damn well take care of my child right now? What about those people?
Yeah, and unfortunately you have people that do have that sense of, it's almost like humiliation where they just, they can't go there.
Yep,
you know?
Yep.
Maybe they had means at one time in their life and they can't handle this shift. If it's somebody that's always been struggling, they tend to handle it differently just because they've been dealing with it differently. But when you have somebody that one time in their life had money, and all of a sudden something happens and now they don't, those are the people that now all of a sudden can't make do because it's so far from their comfort zone and how they used to be that they can't bring themselves to be comfortable enough to put their, it's like it goes against their, meanwhile, the less to suffer or somebody in their family to suffer there, and it's tough, you know. It's such an emotional, challenge for these people because on one hand they want to provide for their family, on the other hand their pride doesn't allow them to accept the handout. So it's a tough situation for them.
Well, and that's the other thing. That's another thing that could probably be handled with a little bit more social decorum, and that is when somebody is in that position to receive some help, to not make them feel when you have to go and you have to sit in a room with 50 million people, nobody has appointments, it's first come, first serve, you get treated like cattle. You don't get treated like you have a problem. You don't get treated like you're not well. You just get treated like, oh, you're here for nothing, so don't cry.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that's not nice either.
That's happened to me, and they didn't even know whether I had insurance or not. I went into this was a couple years ago. I went into an emergency room because I had injured my left eye, and I was in excruciating pain. My eye was tearing down the side of my face. I could barely see out of it. I signed in. There was only one other person in the waiting room with me, and every time I turned around, everybody was chit-chatting. Like no, it wasn't like a busy night. 2 hours later, they hadn't even checked me in yet. And I went over and I said, "Is anybody even going to triage me?" I said, "I'm in incredible pain." She goes, "Well, we're very busy. We haven't gotten to you yet." I left.
Mm-hmm.
I was like so upset. I left and I went somewhere else. I couldn't believe it after 2 hours. And they were very rude to me, and they didn't even know. So I can only imagine how they would treat somebody who was putting their hand out and asking for help. You know.
Yeah.
And that just astonished me,
Well, and that's very often the way it is. That's very often, even when you do have insurance and you walk in, it all depends. So many things depend on what kind of a day a person's having because we're all human beings, and we all get that. You know, it's not like I'm asking for anybody to, fall all over themselves the minute somebody needs help. That's ridiculous. I'm not saying that. But it's like what we talk about all the time, a little bit of mutual respect and understanding and empathy, even if you don't have any sympathy. You look at a guy that just gets brought in and he's drunk as a skunk and he's hurt himself driving his own car and maybe he's even hurt somebody else. He still deserves, if you're really a doctor or you're really a nurse and you are really working in a hospital, you're supposed to take care of that person. You're not supposed to judge them first and take care of them later.
Exactly. Exactly. You know. And the bottom line is, I understand that people have bad days, but I'm
so
sorry. There are certain positions where you really have to keep your personal issues under control. And if you're having a bad day, you have to be aware of that and just take a deep breath and realize that these people have nothing to do with your bad day. You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, that there are certain jobs that unfortunately don't lend themselves to you having that luxury of acting like a jerk, because you could literally be just devastating somebody to the point where you're going to make them worse than when they came in. You know, and if you're just working behind the counter at a 7-Eleven selling cigarettes, you know, that's one thing. But when you're working in a capacity of a caretaker, whether it be a doctor or a nurse or those types of jobs, you really got to keep your emotions more in check. And a lot of these people, those type of professionals that I see in those jobs, don't. And they wear their heart on the sleeve. And if they're having a bad day, boy, you know it. Yeah,
that's the truth. But I think that, like I said, if we were going to try to figure out what we could do that would have a lasting influence on doing something about this homelessness and this terrible place that we are, because it will only get worse, because there are still a lot of people locked into $2,000 a month mortgage payments.
Yep.
For another 20, anywhere from 25 to 30 more years that they're locked into that. And some
right.
of them that I know personally are in their 40s. So that means in their 70s when they're living on Social Security, unless they have a lot of money put away so that they can keep up with commitments like that, they're going to be in trouble. So
mm-hmm.
I think money management in the school won't show any kind of results, or, you know, we won't be able to say, yay, we fixed everything today or tomorrow or even next year. But in 15 years, it'll make a difference for somebody who's in 10th grade right now. Because,
but, you know, I will put something out there, though. I don't know that the schools will put something like that in their curriculum. If you've looked over the last 5 to 10 years, these schools have been systematically reducing programs that would actually enable kids to grow up and be more well-balanced, like music programs and sports programs that help kids to grow confidence and learn how to be team players and stuff like that. Some of the programs that have been removed are actually essential for personal development. So I don't even know if they would add something like that to the curriculum, because the schools don't, and I've read articles on this, that's why I'm saying it, the schools don't recognize learning how to invest money and stuff like that. They don't see that as anything that's intrinsically beneficial, okay? They just teach the basics, okay? So for any parents that are listening to this, there are a lot of programs out there that are geared towards teenagers. I know I should have bought, I can't think of the name, because I actually have two of them at home. I mean, they're quite exceptional. They're very easy to understand. Maybe for the next show, I'll look them, and maybe you can actually, you know, tell people about them so they can go and Google them. There's programs out there, and it's all about teaching young people, before they actually get into the workforce, what to do with money. And that's why I use the example of the $5 a week. They don't feel it, and then 10 years later, they're really solidly financially secure, you know, where most of us, when we get into our 30s, are not, you know.
That's
and
right.
We have a chance to teach this current generation how to be savvy with money. And like I said, I'm not talking investing $1,000 a week. I'm talking about taking whatever you're making, a small portion of it, a part that you're not even going to miss, and invest it now. And there's these courses out there, and they teach kids what that's all about from a very simplistic standpoint. And I think it's up to parents to expose their children to that now, because they don't believe the schools will do it.
That's a shame. You know, when I was in grade school, they opened a savings account for you. And you had a book, and every week you could put your, even if it was only 25 cents, you could put your 25 cents in the bank. The teacher would take it to the bank with her own deposit and deposit in all these 20-some kids' accounts. And at the end of the month, we would have a look and see how much money we had accumulated.
That's
now,
cool.
That was a very, very long time ago. And sadly, it was something like second grade. And then we moved to a different school, and we didn't do it there. But I've never forgotten the fact that they allowed me to do that and that I got a taste of the feeling of adult
accumulating
feeling. Well, there was that too, but even that I hadn't grasped yet because I never took any of the money out of the bank. We left it. I forgot about it. Matter of fact, years later I said to my mother, do you suppose that money that I had in the bank in the school in Ithaca, New York would still be in the bank? She says, I doubt it, honey. So, but I do remember the feeling of being very grown up. And it wasn't like sticking money in a sock. It was like I was a part of the grown-up world, and it was a nice feeling. And I think other kids would get that and appreciate that as well. So, but you're right, of course. I mean, look at little Bailey, the young girl that we keep hurrahing because she's trying to let them have a gay-straight alliance at the end of the day, and they're not letting her do that. So you're probably right, Shelley, that they probably won't add in anything else. But why couldn't they do in math? Why couldn't math class, the beginning of each math class, have something to do with learning how to show accountability and responsibility for your own money?
I know.
Right.
It seems simplistic, but, you know, like I said, the schools are cutting back. They're not going to now all of a sudden start revamping programs. So it's not, I agree that it's something that we should try to inspire the schools to do, but until the schools actually do something like this, parents can help their kids themselves or any kids that are listening to this, Google these programs. Like I said, I'll get you the names of the two that I have. You know, but people can look up these. You know, if there are kids out there that want to have bright futures, right? So if nobody's doing it for them, and I do think that some of your listenership is young people, they can go and they can get these, you know, they can just go online. They can go to the library and take out some of the books, you know, and read them and expose themselves. Information. One of them is by, oh my gosh, I almost remembered his name. He's it's called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's an extraordinary book. He's actually got a sequel out. I read it, and for the life of me, I can't remember the I almost said it twice now. That's an extremely good author. It was a very enjoyable read, and it was so simplistically written that a teenager could understand the principles that he talks about in that book. And, you know, but that's one book that I highly recommend is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And Robert Kiyosaki, that's his name.
Oh.
I just remembered it. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. There's also some books by Robert Allen that are quite exceptional. Also John Cometa. Has some out there about it, and you know, and all these authors say the same thing. They're very critical about the school system. They're very critical about what's not taught in school, and that by the time they counsel people, they're in their 30s, 40s, or 50s, and oh my God, they could have so much money in the bank if they had learned what they're teaching them now when they were in their teens or when they first hit their 20s. You know, and they all say the same thing.
Well, you know, the only problem with that, when you say to me, you know, the parents could do this and the parents could do that, the kids that need the most training are living with parents that never learned how to do that either.
Right.
So,
right. But
so
if
there's
I were a parent and I didn't know it, and I heard this on your radio show, I would buy it to teach myself what to do now and teach my kids so that they didn't. I mean, don't most parents want their kids to have a brighter future than they had? So
yeah, but
was,
I think I do think that they would feel that way. But I have a feeling that it would be overwhelming for them. I'm not positive about that. I'm just, you know, I think a lot of times when you have insecurities when it comes to things like finances and things like that, you're too afraid that you're not going to understand yourself. But I'm glad we're putting it out there, because even if only one person listens and dares take on that challenge, then it will be worth it to some child. So I'm in agreement with it 100%. But I do think most people that don't have any expertise with dealing with their money have a great fear of money.
And I agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. And a lot of people, and including myself at one point, I mean, I see it a little bit differently now, but there was a time when I thought it was much more complicated than it is. And some of it is complicated, you know, when you get into these mm-hmm. day trades and stuff like that. Now, that is a little complicated. You really have to know what you're doing, or you can literally lose your shirt and everything else. But there's a lot of ways of getting involved in that whole arena that are extremely simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, these books make it very, very easy to understand. And then that's just three that I remember off the top of my head. There's a lot of them out there. And but they all say the same
Well, you've got that whole string of books that's called, you know, like Finances for Dummies and This for Dummies and That for Dummies and all that stuff. You have those, and I've had a lot of people tell me that those books, you know, taught them something. So there is that's out there as well. But again,
I'm
all for. I don't want to sound like I'm thinking that won't work, because then that puts out too much negativity. I just think that if there was something mandatory in the school that went along with the regular scheduling of classes that had to do with in the classroom scenario in that venue where kids would learn about the simple things like making a budget for your money. I made $100 this week. My bills are $60 this week. Okay, I can put 10 away and I'll have 30 in case of emergency, or I didn't add in the gas for the car, or whatever the case might be. Simple, simple, simple. Instead of just saying, you know, oh, I made my first check and go out and buy a brand new pair of Nike Jordans, because that's what kids do. And sometimes if they start doing that, they never stop doing that, because that becomes the way to do it. So I looked at all this homeless stuff, I thought to myself, so what do you really do? I mean, what could we say that would make a difference to people, to get people to understand that, you know, you have to know something about what you're doing. If you do lose a job, I mean, there's rules of thumb that I didn't know anything about until I was in my 50s about how much money you'd need to survive if you did lose your job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's statistics out there that actually tell you the numbers, how much money should be saved if, God forbid, you couldn't work for a month, if, God forbid, you couldn't work for a year. This is how much money you should have in your savings account to maintain the lifestyle you're at now. There are those figures available for people to look at. And kids need to know that, and they need to understand the dynamics of having something, a nest egg, you know, something that gets them through the hard times. Then if that had happened 35 years ago with kids that are 35 and 40 now, starting school, we probably wouldn't be in such a predicament with homelessness and street people. We probably really wouldn't be. I mean, there would be some, because some people just, you know, stand up and the shit just hits them. They can't, doesn't matter what they do. So, you know, we both know that that's true, and sad, but true. But there are some people that if with just a little bit of tutelage, right today, they would be sitting in a different seat.
Yeah.
And of all the things I could think of, that's it. Yeah. Mhm.
I think it's most people, you know. And the bottom line is because of peer pressure, societal peer pressure. I mean, think about the day and age we live in. Everything is on credit. Everybody has credit cards. Everybody buys it. So everybody has to have everything now, now, now. Nobody budgets for anything. If somebody wants something, they just up the line on their credit card and they get it. And people never look at what they're actually spending and what they're actually indebting themselves to. And like you said, so that if they lose a job within 1 month, they're in so much over their head they can't recover from it. Where if they lived within their means, and this is something that's a lost art, living within your means, because of how everybody looks at instant gratification. Somebody wants something, they go out, they get the credit, and they get it, whether they can pay for it or not, and then they get themselves in trouble. And, that's about 100 years ago when there weren't credit cards, and you had to save up for 5 years before you could buy something. Think about that, delayed gratification. But when you got it was yours, you paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And
well,
I
think that's all true, yeah. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I think it has to start someplace with some kind of viable information that's taken seriously, that's explained in detail by people who know how to teach and people who understand what it is they're teaching to the young people. And I think that might keep us from getting in worse shape than we're in right now. Otherwise, I don't know what else to do, because just having a whole bunch of houses available or having a whole bunch of free food available, all that is Band-Aids. That's quick fixes for the problem in the moment. But I'm trying to figure out, because I have a lot of grandchildren that are still growing up, and I'd like them to be in a place of less stress, less heartache. I mean, things can happen every day that change your entire life, completely change your life. If taking away every penny you got in the home from underneath you, like a horrible car accident, the death of the major breadwinner, whatever like that happens, you know, it's bad enough what happened. You don't want to lose everything too. So you have to be organized enough to be prepared for the black clouds. And the rainy day, whatever you want to call it.
Right, and the time to get prepared is before the rainy day and before the black cloud. You know,
exactly.
Don't wait and then try to scramble afterwards, because sometimes you can't fix it at that point, where you might be able to do things a little bit differently or get some things in place ahead of time so that you're in a better and a safer position. So that's another thing. A lot of people go, and it's, you know, everything is always tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. I'll look into it tomorrow. You know what? There's no time like the present, especially when you're talking about getting yourself a sense of security, getting yourself in a good place. You know, start, you know, at any point, you can just start reading articles, getting some books, you know, get on Amazon. I love Amazon because you can put in any kind of a book topic, And all of a sudden, you got like 100 different books to choose from, you know. Put in a topic and just start scrolling through the books. A lot of the books, you can even do a virtual walkthrough on a couple of the pages and get an idea of what's in it and see if it's something you'd like to do. And if you see a book you like, don't even buy it. Go to the library, you know. Don't even spend the money on it.
Well, you know? I mean, you know, that's good advice for the young people. The young parents that are out there today, or the young people that are out there today that are just trying to make a go of it. I have a 20-year-old and an 18-year-old in here, and they're both working. They hand me rent every week. You know, they never think twice about it. They never miss a payment. They never do anything like that. And they're saving money. And they want to have what they want to have. But I talk to them about this all the time. If it's worth having, it's worth working for. You don't need to run out and have it tomorrow. So I do believe that, you know, there's a lot of things that we can do as adults, just like with everything else that we talk about. But I do think it would be just absolutely awesome if we could get something cooking in the schools, starting like in fifth grade, teaching the kids about money management and how to save some money, and what you do with it, and, you know, how you set things aside and so that you're always taken care of. Because, you know, the stuff that can happen happens to all of us, and you don't want it to be compounded by the fact that it takes away everything. So, of course, almost out of time, my darling. I will talk to you tomorrow night, if not before. So thank you very much. This was an interesting show tonight. I hope we helped a few people. From my heart to yours, everybody, good night and God bless. Night, Shelly Belly.
Good night, Rainey. All right, good night, everybody.